Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We're off and running on a Tuesday, March the 12th, 2024. We're in our 14th year now with the radio show. We come to you from the Bustos Media Complex here in town, where we've got five radio stations under one roof, and we are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. This station's 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening, along with a lot of content. Pretty much every show we've done over the past full 13 years at buckmastershow.com. Very easy to use website. Put in the name of the guest, and it will pop up. The Buckmaster Live line for our telephone interviews, and we've got a couple of them today, including the leadoff interview presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We go to Arizona State University, now in Tempe. Dr. Dennis Hoffman's director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business up at ASU, where he is director of ASU's Office of University Economist. Dr. Hoffman's sponsored project efforts include a big one, actually. It's a lot of work. Construction maintenance of the revenue forecasting model that is used by the Executive Budget Office for the state of Arizona. And he's been involved with that project going all the way back, I don't want to make him sound too old or anything, since 1982. Dennis Hoffman, professor, how are you, sir?
Bill, I'm doing well, and I hope you are as well.
Doing well. I keep getting all these. It's hard to get a good feel for where we are economically in the state of Arizona with the legislature. I get mixed reports that we've got a big surplus, and others say, no, we're in trouble. What's your take here a couple of months into this legislative session? How are we doing?
Well, again, the surplus issue involves spending, planned spending, required spending, dedicated spending, that kind of thing. You're going to need another expert to assess that. My exclusive focus is on revenues, and revenues are pretty much in line with where the ASU model had them about a year ago when this budget was being planned. There was some deviation from those revenues in the negotiations between the governor and the legislature last spring. There was a widely reported spending frenzy last spring. And now all of a sudden the JLBC is now saying there's not enough revenue, and the numbers that they have published to date, now they're getting a little stale. The last publication from them was January. They've probably made some revisions because money is flowing in at this point, and we'll hear from them again in another few weeks. The revenues have just slowed over the last couple of years, primarily because of a few factors. The major one being the significant income tax cut that was passed, a very substantial cut for our well-to-do taxpayers, especially, and they are that's the segment of our income tax that's really grown the most. So when you cut them dramatically, like by 40 to 45%, and that's what they were cut, you end up losing a lot of revenue. And so, in fiscal 22, we logged $7.5 billion in individual income tax revenue, and our model says about 4.9 this year. JLBC is down around 4.6, 4.7. So, we've taken a pretty substantial haircut there in the individual income tax.
Are the revenues enough to cover our spending needs then in the state?
Well, that's I would label that somewhat of a political question. Mm-hmm. I think depending upon one's political perspective, you define need a little differently, Bill. And I'm not trying to skirt your question, but you know, some of us in the education community see a lot of needs to, if we are to, get spending on K-12 and spending on universities up to levels that compare at all with competitor states. And so we see needs there. And I have to tell you, I am concerned about the next few years, especially in K-12 and in the universities in terms of having enough money to pay the bills. And so, the answer is, if there's not enough money, then you have to figure out alternative ways of managing the problem. And that's cost cutting everywhere or raising revenue where you can.
Are you hearing consumer optimism is starting to pick up in the state of Arizona? Are consumers feeling a little better about the economy, Dennis Hoffman?
Well, I think the comparables against last year are going to be good this spring. The economy remains strong. Job growth remains strong. Wages have gone up. Every report I hear on inflation, by the way, Bill, lists all the prices that have gone up, but they don't happen to mention very often that wages are also up in a manner that allows many consumers to to handle some of those prices. Some people are challenged, but they're not going to be challenged as much this spring, it looks like, Bill, by gasoline prices. I don't know if you remember, but a year ago today, Phoenix was north of $4 a gallon, headed to $5.
Wow.
And Tucson was, in the upper threes, headed to the mid to upper fours. And we're not going to see that, I don't think, this year, because I'm not hearing anything about refinery shutdowns from our boutique blends.
But people go to the grocery store and they feel that the prices that they're paying more.
And they are. They're absolutely paying. They're paying more. Those are things that I think the CPI picks up really well. Let me give you an example of something where the CPI is, it's really kind of crazy. I don't know if you own your own home, Bill, or if you have a fixed mortgage, or if you paid it off, or whatever. But if you own your own home and you have a fixed mortgage, or you've paid it off, you're not subject to the rising costs of shelter. But the feds, when they measure housing costs and shelter costs, they assign an owner equivalent rent to people like me and maybe you. Anybody on a fixed mortgage or that owns their own home, the feds are saying that our cost of shelter is going up about 6%.
Really?
This year.
I had not heard that.
They're just using housing prices. Now, this is something they've done forever, but it's something that really does make, measured inflation really quite sticky. But it also gives us confidence that the CPI will definitely be coming down, because as the pace of housing price increases slows year over year, this component of the CPI will not grow as fast. Owner equivalent rent. It's really a fascinating concept. So not just renters that are really paying rent they're measured in the CPI. The rest of us that own our own homes are also being measured in the CPI.
Wow, I had not heard that. That's the first
too much wonky data stuff for you this morning, Bill.
It's always good to learn something new about that. All right, so we'll hopefully we'll touch base with you in another month or so and get some current numbers as well. Any final thoughts, Professor, before we let you go?
No, I think Bill, the economy is doing pretty well. We've got to get some more revenues flowing in to help pay the bills down at the legislature and support the education community. And goodness knows we need support all around today.
All right. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Dennis Hoffman. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
Bye. All right. Want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. And now an added enhancement. They have the liquor license, so you can have a beer with your lunch. Or how about champagne and orange juice, usually called a mimosa, with your breakfast. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. They're open 6:30 Tuesday through Sunday. They take Monday off, but they are open right now. You can get a great lunch. You can still have breakfast. Whatever you want to do, they'll take care of you. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Up next, Shelley Fishman with me in studio, and in very emphatic and enthusiastic, two thumbs up. We'll find out about that from Shell after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Shelley Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelley via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And I have the advantage that I can contact Shelley right now because he's sitting here at the table with me. Shelley Fishman, Shell, how's your week going so far?
Bill, week is going just fine. You know, today the stock market is going just fine, so I'm having a good day.
Yeah, we're having a good day. And it was good to talk, always good to talk to Professor Hoffman. You know, the inflation, it kind of is like depends on who you ask, right?
Well, perception is
perception.
Reality when
there
it comes
you go.
To
That's
when it
what
comes
I'm looking
to inflation.
For perception.
We got some numbers out this morning that showed inflation had ticked up a tiny bit. Slight, so it's close
increase.
To 4%,
yeah,
on year over year. But when you take a look at where the inflation has come from 2 years ago, we're down very close to where the Fed wants it to be. We're at around 3.2% using the inflation measure that the Fed uses. And so, you know, they've got a little ways to go. What's, I think, driving the market today is kind of a stability piece here. If the unemployment report last week, which modified the prior month's silly numbers, which were 400 and something thousand jobs created, and they modified that back down to something normal over 200,000, and then the numbers for February came in at around 220. Let's call it, you know, just over 200,000 new jobs. What we're seeing is this consistent, you know, above average, but, you know, not tremendously above average job creation rate that has brought us over where the curve was before the pandemic. So when we look at where that curve would have wound us up, we're above that now. So, you know, I've heard, you know, some people who are Biden fans, you know, talk about 15 million new jobs created since he became president. I think the number is closer to 13, but whatever. It's a lot more than just about any president, you know, in the first 10
years. And he certainly touted that in the State of the Union, yeah. And he needs to tout it if he wants to get reelected, because people still do vote about the economy is very important.
Well, and how is. People perceive the economy,
sure.
how they are
he needs
relating
to
it, and he needs to get that message across. There's you know, some things that he has done that he takes credit for that people kind of scratch their heads and say, I'm not seeing that. And, you know, one of the biggest series of things that he has done is the CHIPS Act. And also the infrastructure bill. The problem with all of that is it takes time from when that legislation passes to the time that the doors open on the whatever it is he's building.
The Made in America chips.
Made in America chips
or whatever. It's not happening overnight.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And even though we've gotten really remarkable commitments on the part of some chip manufacturers in some, you know, rust belt states,
sure,
to build some, you know, hugely expensive plants, they're running into the kinds of regulatory and environmental concerns that, you know, if you're going to build a half a million or a three quarter of a million square foot factory, you know, you're going to run into everything from irate neighbors. You know,
not in my backyard. Yeah.
Exactly. And then what is the power consumption of a place like that? Do we have a power grid to support it? You know, are they, you know, going to be pumping out smoke into the atmosphere?
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things that Biden very, you know, I think rightly so takes credit for are things that just take an awful lot of time for people to realize. So, and you know, and then the CHIPS Act is one of those things where those so-called shovel-ready projects just aren't shovel-ready at all. The other thing that I really think that Biden needs to do something about are the import tariffs that were imposed during the Trump years that Biden kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, well, I'll just leave them in place.
You're talking about some of the China, the ones directed at China?
Well, there are a bunch
but other
that
countries
were
too.
Directed
yeah.
at China, but there were other countries like Canada where we put some import tariffs on stuff that we have a hard time either producing here or realizing the demand for. So what that's done is driven up prices. I mean, tariffs by definition drive up prices for the consumer. Unlike what Trump says, you know, they're not penalizing the company that's doing the exporting to us. They're
Biden's administration left those in place largely, right?
He left the Chinese and the Canadian and some others in place.
I wonder why.
The problem is because from a policy perspective, again, we have this Horizon issue. We want to bring that manufacturing back to the States. You know, we globalize the world economy. That's been great in some ways. If you're a person who is in the middle class and you know that all of the growth in GDP went to the top 10% and you ain't there, you
you're
know,
not in,
then,
you're
then
not
how do you stay
the
in
crowd.
The middle class? Well, you know, one of the ways you stay in the middle class is that all the things you consume have been produced elsewhere at very, very cheap rates. And so your level of living, you know, your standard of living has not seemed to be hurt much unless you, you know, live in a Rust Belt city where the factories are closed and you either have to move or be unemployed. But what's happened is that the things, especially the higher end things that people need to buy, have come down in price tremendously. So, you know, when I, the first high definition television that I bought was a CRT. It was a, you know, a big tube. It was deep and heavy and, you know, weighed 500 pounds. And
you need a semi truck to get it over to your house.
Right. And it was all of 28 inches.
Yeah, it was huge.
And it was $1,000.
Yeah. Look at the price now.
Now, you know, for $500, $600, $700, you know, you get a 40-inch flat panel.
Yeah.
And it's
lightweight.
And it's lightweight.
Relatively lightweight.
But it wasn't made here in this country.
No.
So a lot of the things, now China is relying on exports. And so to the extent that they're having problems, then the tariffs are harming their economy. And to that extent, that's probably politically a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you get into a situation where prices are being artificially increased here in this country, and we don't have the production capability like in chips or televisions or solar panels to meet the need in this country by manufacturing those, you know, that stuff here in the U.S., then that translates instantly into inflation, and the perception of people who want to buy that stuff and find that they, you know, they might have to wait for 4 or 5 months to get delivery on their car, or, you know, several months to get their solar panels installed, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, try to build an addition to your house these days,
mm-hmm.
and you find out that lumber is still pretty hard to come by.
Yeah, it is.
And so those are things that are hurting Biden in two ways. Number one, they're playing into the higher inflation numbers. But number two, they're presenting to the general public a perception that there are shortages, that the economy isn't really doing that well, and where it is doing okay, you're paying a lot more for it.
Yeah.
So those are things that I think that the Biden administration needs to figure out a way to deal with, because they are so concerned, not just about, you know, the numbers, which, as Dr. Huffman said, the numbers on the economy are really good. What's not so good is people's perceptions
yep.
of those numbers.
And how do you change perception?
Well, you know, sometimes
don't people
perception
sometimes
is
say,
reality.
Yeah, they say that perception can be 90% of reality. I don't know.
Right.
Whatever.
And you know, by repeating the same message, by documenting, as we have done here on this show, documenting what the facts really are. But at the end of the day, if you go to the grocery store and you find out that chicken is, you know, $3 a pound or whatever it is, I don't know, and you remember when it was a quarter a pound, you say, what's wrong here? And so, you know, you call up the White House and they say avian flu.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did Biden cause avian flu? Doesn't matter. You know, it happened on his watch.
Yeah.
And so those are the kinds of things that I think we're, between now and the election, we're going to be seeing more of some fixes. Again, the Fed is going to have to start lowering interest rates. It's another pet peeve of mine. I understand why they're being very cautious about not reversing the higher interest rates, because inflation, as they measure it, has not come down to the level that they feel comfortable with. However, those high interest rates are causing companies, even though they've made commitments to build some stuff, they don't want to borrow money at today's rates, so they're not building it yet. And it's caused people who want to buy mortgages and that kind of thing, or borrow money to buy cars, or even home appliances, are really feeling the impact of 4%, 5%, and 6% loans.
I don't know if there'll be another rate cut coming up.
There will. Almost certainly in June.
Oh, okay.
It would have been nice to see in January.
Yeah.
And those are the kinds of things that if those rates start coming down, that will affect people's perceptions, I think, of how the economy is doing.
Right.
So a long answer
around
to a short question.
Around the election time, right? Yeah.
By that time, people have
made up their mind. All right, Shelley, always a pleasure. Some very interesting takes and good thoughts as usual. I hope you have a great rest of the week.
You too. See you next week.
All right. See you next week.
Take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hello, everybody, back in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Once a quarter here on the Buckmaster Show, we focus on what I believe, and I think many would agree with me, the most important resource that we have in this state is water. Our Arizona Water Quarterly, presented by Central Arizona Project, Your Water, Your Future. Joining us for her quarterly visit to the show, Karen Caesar, the Pima County representative on the Central Arizona Water Conservation District Board. Hey, Karen, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Bill?
Doing well. So serendipitous to have you on today. It's like every day there's new news about the Colorado River.
Oh, yeah, there is. There's lots of news to share. So I'm going to start with the fact that it's 2024 now. This is our first visit of this year. And Arizona is now in a Tier 1 shortage. So you might remember last year we were in a Tier 2A shortage. So we're actually in better shape this year than last year.
That's
and
good news.
Very good news. Mother Nature was good to us last year. We had some really record snowpack, and that really contributed to rising lake levels. And between that and what our partners did in Arizona to conserve water in Lake Mead, we're in better shape.
These numbers look amazing, some of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's really helped us, figure out, where we need to go and not act in crisis mode, which it feels like we were doing for a few years there. So
the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation announced some very important things.
Yes. Yeah. So what's happening now, back ending 2022, we were in dire shape.
Yeah.
Lake levels were dropping. Snowpack was awful. And everybody, upper basin, lower basin, everybody got together and said, we need to do something about this to be prepared.
Hitting the panic button.
A little bit. And also, it's also not just sitting around hoping that things would be better and hoping we'll have a better year. Some very, very specific steps were being looked at to help protect the river and the lakes. So one of the things that did was it triggered calls for additional conservation and a federal process to potentially, and I say the word potentially, modify Colorado River operations if needed. But so in this process that's been going on, just last week, the Bureau of Reclamation announced that it accepted what we call the consensus approach that was proposed by the lower basin states as part of the supplemental environmental impact statement. And what that does is it conserves 3 million acre feet of water, in Lake Mead by 2026.
That's huge.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's huge. And it was a big, step forward. And we've already taken big steps toward that. Last year alone, Arizona's conservation partners held back more than 947,000 acre feet in Lake Mead, both voluntarily and via mandatory shortage reductions that we've been taking since 2020. So it was a huge group effort. And what this shows is collaboration works. Here's another amazing testament to the fact that, along this line, also, the consumptive use of Colorado River water, which translates into how much water people used, in the lower basin last year was the lowest since 1983. So conservation messages are getting out, and we're all realizing that the river's health is a responsibility for everybody that relies on it.
Well, it certainly is, and I understand there's a big announcement coming.
Yes. It's, but wait, there's more. While we've been saying that the supplemental environmental impact statement protects the system for the next few years, with that coming forward, we could basically pivot to what we've been referring to as the next big thing. And that's the fact that the guidelines that will be in place after 2026 are getting ready to expire, and we really have to be starting to work on that.
Are you talking about some kind of a new alternative?
Yes, yeah, and it's kind of interesting if you think about it. Before we hit the panic button in the last couple years, we were already looking at the expiration of the guidelines, but this detour that we had to do to address the immediate challenge kind of let let, you know, gave some time for another option to be developed. So this is what we've got right now as part of the whole process for the next big thing. The lower basin states in the Colorado River Basin jointly submitted what is called an alternative to the Bureau of Reclamation. And I'm going to remind your listeners, all of the Colorado, the river, the lakes and stuff, they really are under the auspices and jurisdiction of the federal government and the Bureau of Reclamation. So they are the umbrella governing entity that we all work with and look to for all these, all things Colorado River. So we want to offer an alternative on how we can operate the Colorado River system in the coming decades to ensure its health and sustainability. And we're calling it an alternative because it is just, it's not a plan or agreement. It's just something that the lower basin states put together. We worked collaboratively with California and Nevada to come up with something that we want them to consider. So it is a big deal.
So what's new about the alternative, Karen?
Well, the goal of this is we want to address the impacts of drought and climate change through a holistic and sustainable approach to the coordinated operations of Lake Powell and Lake Mead that improves predictability. So I've talked a lot here that Lake Mead is our yardstick, has been our yardstick to determine shortage for many, many years. We've talked about its elevations, but Lake Powell and Lake Mead work together. But this alternative completely reimagines how the Colorado River system is operated. And it looks at what we call system contents based upon the total volumes in seven major reservoirs rather than just the two largest reservoirs, Lake Powell and Lake Mead. So this is a paradigm shift for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, those two had been the big two and that had been the focus, but this is a new approach.
This is a new approach and it looks at total system contents. So reductions would be determined not just as the yardstick of Lake Mead, but based upon all the available system contents. And in many, if not most cases, what it means, and there's been a lot of, like I said, the really smart, you know, hydrologists and scientists and modelers have looked at this. They said that for most cases, the lower basin will take reductions of up to 1.5 million acre feet. And that's probably a standard reduction that will be taken. And what that does also is it addresses a longstanding issue in the lower basin known, which we've called the structural deficit, which is caused in part by evaporation and in part by, you know, the fact that the allocations, the total allocations of the Colorado River were more than, you know, what the river was able to produce. So, you know, we realize that over and above this, additional reduction by all the basin users may be necessary to ensure the basin's protected against climate change. But it's definitely a first
new look
at how we're going to approach things.
And again, it's kind of the lower basin alternative. And when we're talking about this, we're focusing on three states, Arizona, Nevada, and California.
Yes, absolutely. The lower basin states remain committed to working with our neighbors in the upper basin states and Mexico, all water users there, tribes, stakeholders, and NGOs to develop a basin-wide consensus approach for further evaluation. But this is the first step and a starting point.
A lot to digest here, but as I know, you always have some other things to talk about. What's going on with the CAP?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I'm going to do today, and I always like to give a plug for our Know Your Water News website and invite all your listeners to sign up because that's a great way to receive kind of bite-sized bits of news about CAP and Colorado River Water and a lot of infographics and information. So I'm going to, you know, have them go look at this, but there's a couple things in specific that they can go look at. Over there.
Well, they can ask all sorts of questions like, why isn't the canal covered by solar panels?
Yes, you got it. That is one of the most common questions we get at CAP. Why isn't the canal covered by solar panels?
Why not?
Well, you know, it sounds on its surface, it sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Sounds like a good idea. The basic contention is it would prevent or reduce evaporation and generate renewable power supplies. And although those two things are good in and of themselves, the idea about covering our particular canal has been studied several times in the past by not only CAP, but Reclamation. And to date, the conclusion's been that this would be inefficient. For several reasons, including construction difficulties, maintenance demands. Our canal winds through a lot of very remote parts of Arizona, some technological inefficiencies, and the fact that it really wouldn't help evaporation as much as you think.
All right. Before we wrap it up, you got a couple of quick pilot projects you wanted to tell us about.
Well, yeah. Well, along the lines of the canal, we're not, just because it doesn't make sense now doesn't mean that we want to just, you know, chuck it for forever. There are some other entities that are doing some pilot projects, so we're watching them, and we'll see what happens. And again, the Know Your Water News website has a very detailed explanation that goes into much more detail than I have today about why that doesn't work.
Are you still doing the awards for research?
Yes, yeah, and this is one last thing I really wanted to be able to talk about today. You know, we have got. CAP has our annual awards for research. Reference, why aren't the canals covered? We always need more research. We need new cutting edge information, and we need to develop our next generation of water researchers and technical people and engineers. So we offer this award to undergraduate and graduate students for original research focused on water issues that affect central and southern Arizona and the Colorado River.
So students can get involved here.
Oh, students, absolutely. This is absolutely for students. And last year, the first and second place winners got to present the results of their research at a board meeting, which is also not the board, but of course our mm-hmm. live stream audience. And it was just fascinating, and it was so impressive. And so this is a shout out to, if there's any U of A students out there or anybody out there that has a U of A student that's researching water issues, you're listening, consider applying. We'd love to recognize your work. And again, you can learn more at
knowyourwaternews.com.
Perfect. Yes.
All right. Karen Caesar, always a pleasure. See you in a couple of months. We'll see how that somewhat good news will hold up. I hope it does.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much,
Thank
Bill.
Thank you, Karen. All right. We'll take a break right here. Buckmaster on a Tuesday.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico makes a great getaway. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Only about a three-hour drive from the Tucson area. Perfect time of year to do hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Great places to stay as well. Some great places to eat in historic Silver City and all sorts of outdoor activities. Speaking of outdoor activities, Mitch Tobin is the Buckmaster Show contributor on the environment. Mitch, former environmental reporter for the Napa Valley Register, Tucson Citizen, Arizona Daily Star, now the co-director of the Water Desk, an independent journalism initiative at UC Colorado, Boulder, the Center for Environmental Journalism that focuses on water, Western water issues. His latest project is a free newsletter, which I'm enjoying very much, titled Snow News. Mitch is a he loves to ski, and he's in the right place. Colorado, joining us now on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Hey, Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
So tell me, how's this year's snowpack looking?
Well, things got off to a pretty slow start in a lot of places around the West, including here in Colorado as well as California. But we then went through a pretty wet period. You may remember hearing about atmospheric rivers, these big storms hitting the West Coast. And so things have improved quite a bit in the last couple of months. And so here in Colorado, it varies from place to place, but we're roughly around average. California is now slightly above average. Some places further up north, like Montana and Washington State, they've had a really lousy year, and that's true for other northern tier states in the upper Midwest, for that matter. But things have gotten better, and so I would say water managers are breathing somewhat of a sigh of relief because the snowpack has come up in a lot of places and is doing much better.
We just had our quarterly water report from the CAP. They're feeling a lot better, Mitch Tobin, than they did a year ago.
Yeah, if you remember, it wasn't too long ago that we were talking about this crisis that the Colorado River was facing with the reservoir levels, Lake Mead and Lake Powell really going down rapidly, concerns that hydropower was going to be affected, or even that the water was not even going to be able to get through these dams. But last winter was a really big year for the snowpack here in Colorado, other places in the Rockies, California especially. And, you know, all that snow really gave the system some breathing room and gave the various interests and parties involved in the Colorado River more time to try to figure out how to still share the sacrifice and cut back on the usage. So, you know, last year's winter was a reprieve of somewhat, and this winter also, at least it hasn't been a bad year that sort of put us back in crisis. You know, it hasn't been a banner year yet either. But, you know, I think people are feeling better and they have more time and more space to try to negotiate. But we'll see what happens, you know, for the rest of this winter. There's still a fair amount of time, and it's, you know, not very clear what will happen as far as the snowpack and precipitation and the rest of March and April and into the spring.
There is some concern that in California that with climate change, the atmospheric river is going to become more and more important. Are you kind of getting that feeling too?
Yes, I've written about that a little bit. And so these atmospheric rivers, they get the name because they're sort of like a river in the sky. They transport a huge amount of water, and very often they're tapping that moisture in the tropics in places like Hawaii. So you may have heard of this Pineapple Express storm, owing to the fact that it's fetching that moisture from these very warm places. And so these storms dump a tremendous amount of rain at lower elevations and are huge producers of snow. And they really do account for a big percentage of the snowpack in the West Coast states. Less so, but it's still a very important piece of the puzzle in the Rockies. So climate change is expected to make these atmospheric rivers bigger and stronger. The thing is, though, they are already tend to be warm storms. And so a lot of them, rather than dropping snowflakes, may drop raindrops. And so although these storms may get more powerful and bring more moisture, it may not fall as snow, it may fall as rain. And the snow is really valuable because it sits up there as this frozen reservoir and stays up there and then gradually melts and allows people to use that water during the warmer months.
Yeah, and that's an area I want to touch on with you. This winter looks like it could go down in history as one of the warmest in the United States. Places like Minnesota, where they have the ice festival every year, their winter festival had to be canceled. It was like one of the warmest winters, or is one of the warmest ever. They're starting their golf season a month earlier. High temperatures in the 70s in late February and March, just unheard of things. And so that this all fits in with the climate change, this warming of certainly North America.
Yes, and you know, they just came out with the data where they look at what's called meteorological winter, which is December, January, and February, and that was the driest, the warmest on record for the United States. And you know, people in the upper Midwest have been talking about it being a lost winter, essentially. And so clearly it's important for us in the West, and especially in the Southwest, because it's so important for our water supply, because the Colorado River is mostly made of snowmelt. But it's, you know, having effects not only here in our region, but throughout the country and throughout the world.
How can people get a hold of, and I, as I mentioned in the intro, I love this snow news. How do you get that?
Sure. Pretty easy. It's just www.snow.news. So it's a free multimedia newsletter. It's on Substack, but you just go to snow.news. You can even just plug that in. And so I write about what's been happening with the snowpack in the West, as well as other snow-related issues, not solely connected to water. And, you know, it's a fascinating subject. The more I learn about it, the more interested I am in it. It's just really interesting how important snow is, and it's just a fascinating phenomenon to learn about.
Snow news is good news. Let's put it that way. Well, hopefully it's good news. I loved your piece on, you know, since we were kids, I grew up in Chicago, and so I knew a little bit about snow, about no two snowflakes ever are going to look the same. You had a whole article about that. Fascinating.
Yeah, it is really pretty amazing when you think about it, how snowflakes form. And so I go into that about the whole, you know, physics and the process of how these crystals form. And yeah, it really is true. You know, I should say that scientists and laboratories can set the conditions so that they can grow snowflakes that they consider, quote unquote, identical twins, in which you would really have a difficulty telling them apart. But, you know, certainly at the level of molecules, everyone is different.
Well, the atmospheric rivers, we'll see if we get any more here, because they really saved Nevada and California, from what I understand, because it was shaping up to be a way below normal water year. But the reservoir is looking much better in Nevada and California. We'll see if, I think we've got a couple more weeks to maybe get another snow out of some of these atmospheric rivers.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, there's still time left. April 1st is kind of a key date that water managers look at as far as where the snowpack is. But at least here in Colorado, it can snow a lot in April and beyond. So we need to keep an eye on it.
All right. We always like talking with Mitch Tobin, our contributor on the environment. Mitch, thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Bill. Take care.
All right. Mitch Tobin with us from Colorado. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Mitch and John, I'm Bill. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 12:04.